Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, is that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number. Isn't that convenient? Along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
Nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
I don't like blood.
Here we ghost. Boo. We're ghosting.
Three. Boo. Ah. No. And ghosting.
Oh, welcome to With Gorley and Rust. My name is Matt Gorley.
I'm Paul Rust. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Paul.
You guys are listening to With Gorley and Rust. It's a podcast where we just take a seat back, sit back, seat back, stand back.
We take a... this podcast is over.
Because I've told you before, I love it when you go to a movie theater and like at the Arclight, they'd have somebody introduce movie and they go, so sit back, relax, enjoy the movie. And I'd always go, yes, that's what this is for. I forgot. Like I'd get so caught up in getting snacks there on time. And then when that person gives permission to sit back and relax.
That's the key.
So that's what I was trying to say. Like the podcast that gives you permission to sit back and relax.
Absolutely. This podcast, you can just lie on a couch and listen to it. Or if you want to do dishes or commute or even work or exercise. Mm. But you
what's
don't
your favorite
have
thing to.
To
do when you listen to a podcast, Matt?
I think I like driving and listening to podcasts because I do like driving, especially long distances for some reason. And I think I drive better when I'm not concentrating on driving. So a podcast is the perfect thing. However, I need to have a podcast to go to the gym. Music doesn't do it for
me. Oh, really?
I have to trick my brain into not thinking about the misery that I'm experiencing at a gym.
Yeah, and so music is kind of like, you're being reminded of like, well, the music's playing because I'm supposed to be keeping my butt. Mm-hmm. Like, but if you hear somebody talking, you can just kind of be like, thinking about whatever notions they're bringing up, and then you're like, hey, I forgot I was just doing 8 reps.
I forgot I'm yoked. What about you? How do you listen?
I really enjoy listening to a podcast when, I like to do my collages, so that's a fun time to listen to a podcast.
One. Yeah.
And that would be also a time when I'd listen to commentaries. Mm. If I didn't burn them all up, I'd listen to every commentary on earth. The other time I like to do it is in the morning, getting things kind of set up, opening windows, letting the sun in, getting everything kind of ready like that. And then when day becomes night, the ritual of kind of going around, and I become my own little like DP, like my own little cinematographer at night, where when the lights go down, I find little, this is annoying. My wife and daughter, they like this. They like they'll come in and be like, hey, can you get the, like,
same here.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I've ensured that pretty much every light bulb in this house is controllable from a phone, and color and like hue and temperature. So at night, it's always like an amber glow in the house.
Yes. It makes a big, big difference, because the amber glow is important because dim light can be scary. Some can make you feel a little weird. So you got to make sure the dim light is the appropriate
lighting. Yeah. Except then you also don't want like bright white or blue light, you know, because that's miserable. But here, for the live streamers, even in this room that we're in,
I love this.
We can change the, let's see.
Ooh, this is like what we heard about John Alcott on a Terror Train. Remember, he had all the lights set on a dim. Did you live streamers, screamers see this?
This is, you can't probably tell, but it went red in here. This is called Halloween.
Now, Matt, mention what the live stream is. Mention what this podcast does. So if people wanted to see the lights turn red.
Yes, that's what a could good they point. Do? This is an entree into
Oh my God, now it's green.
You can go to patreon.com/withGorley and Rust. And if you subscribe at the Xenomorph level, not only do you get your name shouted out on this podcast, which we'll do after this movie discussion, you can email us at withGorleyandRustPod@gmail.com and let us know your name and shout out. But you can watch these podcast recordings streamed live, like listeners are doing right now. You can also get film commentaries. Paul, tell them about the film commentary we did not just yesterday.
So we did a film commentary yesterday, less than 24 hours ago.
That's right.
And I truly think it was unprecedented. I can't imagine anybody else doing something so stupid.
Or wanting to do something.
Or having any sort of desire. But we did, and it really was life-changing. We watched the theatrical cut of Halloween 6, Curse of Michael Myers, at the same time as Halloween 6, Curse of Michael Myers, producer's cut.
That's right. And it was really fun.
Yeah. Fascinating, too. Sometimes you go, ooh, that is happening at the same time, even though the other things were off. But then also a real... just a way to explore how in one cut somebody could be electrocuted and just die, and in another cut somebody could be electrocuted that it explodes their head.
What was going on in those timelines?
Now, Matt, remember last week when we were trying to figure out what COMM meant?
Yeah. That's funny. I just looked at it and I did it again.
Well,
it meant commentary.
No, I think it means Curse of Michael Myers. Oh. I'm telling you what your brain thought. No, you're right. It's commentary, but it could also mean Curse of
Michael Myers. That's amazing that it could. It should always mean that. From now on, our film commentaries will be called, like, you know, The Thing, Curse of Michael Myers.
I would love every filmmaker to do a commentary for Curse of Michael Myers.
God, because so many of them would be going, what the fuck is happening? And what did we stumble upon that we're going to do next because of this?
Oh, this is extraordinary. Next time, we're going to do, because it just got mentioned.
Yeah.
While we were doing it, and they're like, hey, that'd be good. It's a, and this is new for the live streamers, because right. Nobody's heard this commentary.
Or the yet. Listeners, yeah.
Or the listeners. Hey, we're going to do the Psycho original and the Psycho remake side by side.
As they... I'm presuming we're meant to be watched because Gus Van Sant was apparently so particular about that. You know more about this than me, but weren't there like two minor differences or something like that? There's the...
Yeah, there's some extra shots.
Yeah.
A goat in the middle of a rainy road, stuff like that.
Why choose that? That's, if you're going to adhere so closely, why divert for that? That's.
I think they also add a sound to when... Norman is watching the girl undress.
Well, so he full on masturbates.
He does. Yeah, okay, so it's not just a sound.
No,
they
show.
It's the sound and the fury. He's photographed from like the shoulders up or something.
Yeah,
but yeah.
But you see his shoulders moving up and down, and his eyes cross.
Yeah, and go steam come out of his ears. Auga. What?
What was that?
That's just like when Daffy Duck goes crazy, or
yes,
you know,
yes, he does.
That's that thing that when Bugs Bunny drinks liquor and he goes. We talked about that, I'm sure, yeah. Before. So. Anyway, get on that Patreon, subscribe. There's a whole community going on there in the Discord. Quick announcement.
Yeah, we just talked to some live streamers before we recorded. Got
That's
to say
right.
Hello to a bunch of people, welcome them in. We had some good thoughts, some good notions that we'll share.
Notions.
But were we...
Just off notions, do you remember that, speaking of like the classics of Bugs Bunny and stuff, when like Daffy Duck would operate an elevator and they'd go to the top and be like, you know, housewares, lingeries, notions.
Now, is Notions also the room that the key that they whistle to goes to? Remember what it would be like when somebody get a key ring in those cartoons? They go, front door, back door.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think that key meant? It's funny.
What it's does funny that joke. Mean? Is that like just the
I remember asking like my mom and dad, like, what's that? Why do they whistle? And them just being like, the joke is that it's secret or, you know.
How funny.
Although I went to a place to get a anniversary present and a card, and my daughter went with me. And we were looking at the cards, and she was going to pick out the one, and she pointed at this one, and I read it. It said, "You give me a lady boner," which, along with being inappropriate, I also just don't like that internet-y speak. Like,
no.
Lady boners all over the place.
We've talked about this. Yeah, I'm with you. But
who knows? We could be like these redheaded killer in the bedroom window. Maybe that's what it's about, Matt. We don't like seeing a woman be... sexual and public.
But we're not going on to do what he did.
No,
we just hate the internet parlance.
Yes, yeah. So
but she didn't know what she was
Mary
picking.
But Mary was like, what's it say? And then...
Oh, no.
It's one of those things, you know, when you go, hey, no matter what, I'm going to be honest with my kid all the time as much as I can be. Because you want to raise somebody who's authentic.
Right.
So when... I said it, though. I said, you give me a lady... Oh, it's like she likes her so much, or something like that.
And so your daughter's like, great, get the card. Yeah, what's the problem?
Get three of those. Send them,
that doesn't sound like internet
to
parlance
to me. Each of my grandmas. but yeah, the... I referenced that just right now. We're here to talk about the bedroom window. Was there anything else?
Well, just really quickly, I'm going to go through 2 points of personal business, and I've already talked about these, so I'll be real quick about it. It's Friday today when this comes out. Tomorrow, there's a Townland and Mall Walk and Show at the Dynasty Typewriter.
Yes.
Maybe Townland's last ride for quite some time. Come check it out, and if you can't make it in person, because I think tickets are maybe gone by this point, you can watch live streaming. And then Keys to the Kingdom, Amanda's in my podcast about working at theme parks is out now anywhere you
listen. It's a hit. People who listen to it are going well. They love it.
It's going well.
People got to check it out.
Yeah.
Matt, I got to say, when you gave the spiel or whatever you would say about the Patreon,
yeah,
and then now with the Townland show and Keys to the Kingdom, if somebody was listening to that, they'd probably go, did my finger accidentally hit 200%?
Because 200 times.
You were
micro-machined
it. You were going fast. I couldn't believe it.
The guy from Micro Machines commercials.
Is he still alive?
I don't know, but remember, even before he was that guy, he was just known as the fast-talking guy. Like, he made a career out of it.
Yeah.
He was on That's Incredible and everything.
Yes, I just watched last week somebody on Reddit put him... He said the words to Bad the fastest. The lyrics. He read the lyrics to Bad. I was like, well, that's a pretty specific corner.
Wow. Yeah. Who did he have to challenge for that? Was there a previous champion that he unthroned?
It's funny. He does. I mean, I think we've talked about it before. The 80s, like what was funny a lot of times was just weird voice.
Yeah. I'm going to look him up while you...
Yakov Smirnoff,
right.
Judy Tenuta, Bobcat Goldthwait,
Sam Kinison,
Pee Wee Herman, and then... What are we just talking about right now? Where am I blanking?
The fast-talking guy.
The fast-talking guy, he fits into that. People just like seeing weird sounds come out of people's mouths during that time.
I know.
Why?
Speaking of Louis Anderson, I was on a podcast the other day where we were picking...
Michael Winslow?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
We were picking the best love song, and I meant to say We Have All the Time in the World by Louis Armstrong, but I said We Have All the Time in the World by Louis Anderson. This guy's name is John Moshita Jr.
We have all the time in the world. I'm an answer.
That was my friend's impression of Louis Anderson. It was him as host of Family Feud.
Oh, yeah.
Because it'd be like...
John Motormouth Moshita, the fast talking guy. He's still alive. He's only 69. That actually seems pretty young.
Weird, yeah. You know why it seems young? Because when we were kids, he was bald. So you're just bald guy must have been, you know, you think he's 80 when you're a kid.
So he was only like 29 when he was doing that stuff.
Wow.
He was in the prime of his motor mouthing.
I wonder if it is like boxing or something, you know, where you have your peak years of motor mouthing.
I'm sure, because I can't put words together like I used to be able to. 586 words per minute. His record was broken in 1990 by Steve Woodmore, who spoke 637 words
Steve
per minute.
Steve Whomore? You don't know this guy.
Oh, it doesn't stop here. And then by Sean Shannon, who spoke 655 words per minute on August 30, 1995.
However, gives a shit about those guys, though.
Moshita questions the legitimacy of those who claim to be faster than him. That's all that says.
I like that attitude.
good stuff. He's in Young Doctors
I heard there's
of Love.
Actually some controversy going around because... Jim Jordan helped Motormouth like put out there that those were illegitimate other winners and stuff, and
absolutely.
That he actually
and he's right.
Good or bad, say what you want about Jim Jordan, it is something he shouldn't have gotten involved in.
Yeah, and he's right.
He's
always right.
He's always right. You're right.
Yeah. He's always right, even if he's wrong. He's always right, even if he's wrong. All right, let's talk about the bedroom with the Steve Gutenberg, Dr. Mike Curtis Hanson. My name is Matt Gourley. This is Paul Russ. We're talking about with Gourley and Russell. Dice him, slice him.
I knew a guy in college who could do Wayne's World like that.
Really?
Not like motor mouth, but just he would go, I am Wayne Gamble. I'm the host of Wayne's World. Yes, you know me. I live it with my parents, which I admit is both demented and sad. And here with me, as always, is Garth. Garth, he had memorized it that he...
I could kind of do that with Platoon Death.
Hardly hang out with him because usually he was fighting off chicks.
Same here.
I was like, hey, do you want to hang out? Nope. Three dates tonight. I recited Wayne's World to a girl.
You ever, when you have to memorize lines, do you ever try to say them as fast as possible? Because I feel like once I can do that, I have the verbiage mastered, so then I can kind of like... You know, so
I like that. That's a good idea. No, I I guess I could. There was one time I remember for White House Down.
You auditioned for White House Down?
For the White House tour guide.
What? And we just watched that not too long ago.
Really?
I know what part you're talking about. Oh my God.
And I remember seeing the theater then and being able, like a song that you know, being able to say it in my mind with the guy.
Yeah.
Because I was like, God, I really.
And they didn't change much, huh?
Yeah. And it's funny too, because it's like memorizing that was the equivalent of a tour guide who works at the White House who has to memorize the spiel. Like,
right.
It was like, you know, it probably just made up facts and stuff. I don't know.
I'll tell you what.
But
nothing against the guy who's in it. Truly, he's fine. But Paul Rust in that movie?
Oh, without a doubt.
Cut above. It would have been a cut above. Yes, I'm not even joking. You should have played that part.
I think that guy probably was the right guy to play that part.
I don't know about that.
But I bet there was a time that I could have said that really fast.
Yeah.
You know what I heard cool actors do?
Like
Christopher Walken. And I'm not being facetious when I say this, a truly great, talented actor, a friend of mine, Armin Weitzman.
Oh, yeah.
When I said facetious, I didn't want you to say cool actors, Christopher Walken and Armin Weitzman, but the two of them, they're great. And Armin Christopher Walken and Armin Weitzman will not let punctuation hang them up. And it makes for good, interesting line readings, because it's like you're still honoring the writer's text. You're not changing words or anything, but you are given a little different thing by.
That's a technique. Who is it? Is it? It's not Meisner. Who there is like an acting
moving it around, put a comma somewhere,
or just take it out and just kind of like you learn it purely organically first before you decide to ever put any of that back in.
Well, as long as we're speaking of fine acting, what a time to talk about Steve Guttenberg. Okay. Now, this movie's pretty weird, I think.
That's the best way to describe it. I have that in my notes.
You do?
Hold on.
Oh my God, man. It's just a weird movie, right?
It's weird acting, weird movie, weird.
Wow. Isn't that
must mean
isn't that weird that we both
must mean it's really weird if we're both saying it's weird.
And I and when I thought that when the movie was done, I was like, that was weird. I thought I have to imagine that's gonna be the listener's response too, was like, that was weird.
Because it's not bad or good.
Right.
It's just weird.
It's weird.
It's left of it's odd. It's oddly directed. It's really oddly acted.
Yes.
It's oddly scored, oddly paced. Oddly, but maybe also pretty well shot at times, although there were two DPs on this. So.
Yeah, and two composers, I noticed, too.
Whoa, two Guttenbergs. Did you know that?
No.
Two Steve Guttenbergs.
Wow, that's this town's too big for two Guttenbergs, I think.
And a pair of Isabelle Huppert.
Two Huppert?
Yes.
That's interesting you say that. Okay, so that's kind of like where we're coming, because I thought almost like a doctor or something. I'm trying to figure out what made it weird, because I agree with you that I think I was trying to do this thing of have you ever thought before, if you saw, I'm just thinking this now, but you read something and you might not give it credit because it didn't come in a hard copy book.
Uh-huh.
But you wonder sometimes, if I pulled this off a shelf and it was in a cover and it was published and I opened it up, I would probably give the writing some benefit of the doubt.
You'd imbue it with authority.
Yeah. Or this was intentional. This isn't just some goof. So when I was watching this, it was kind of it looks like a handsome movie, and it's shot well. If this was the script and it was just different actors, would the movie be good? And there was a couple times where I thought that, because when the scenes had really good acting, like a Wallace Shawn.
Mm-hmm.
Or that neighbor lady
who
came out and at first was really friendly and then it turned to her being threatening. it's for me, if I had to be a doctor and be the symptom, I do think it's Gutenberg. I think if like the and Isabel Huppert,
yeah,
I think if
I
those
agree.
Two had just been differently cast,
I
know
I
they say
50%
is casting, but this is like a true example.
I think
of that.
It's even more, and I couldn't agree more. I think also throw into the mix the fact that Curtis Hanson has not arrived at LA Confidential Curtis Hanson yet, and part of that is resources, but where he's come from with Roger Corman, right?
Yeah, but you know what's incredible? This movie that's amazing, The Silent Partner with Elliot Gould and Christopher Plummer that he did.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah.
It's awesome.
I didn't realize that was him.
And it's similar to this. It's almost like when I was watching this, I was like, oh, they're doing the story of the guy who knows who the criminal is and he's watching him and can kind of put the screws on him. But then it doesn't really follow that. Then he becomes like wrongfully accused.
Yeah, and I have an issue with that movie too because I find Elliot Gould's character to be kind of
annoying,
amoral and a little reprehensible and self-serving. So I find myself wondering where my loyalties should lie. Also, I'm just so disposed to liking Christopher Plummer, and he's such a bastard in that movie that I don't think I could reconcile.
Well,
it,
he's just a Santa too. I know, like, how could you?
But it also takes place in a bank in a mall. So why don't I adore this movie? I don't know. Maybe I need to give it another shot. But yeah, but you got Curtis Hanson coming out of Roger Corman films, which I think is going to start you off certainly in a direction that he probably had to get a lot of that out of his system to arrive at kind of the really capable Curtis Hanson that we know and love.
Well, because we know him from The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, a previous Yuppie Nightmare. We'll know him next week with Bad Influence because he directed that as well. Brantley Palmer in the live stream said he thinks Curtis Hanson should be considered the patron saint of Yuppie Nightmares.
It could very well be. I think he also
did River Wild, which would be a fun Yuppie Nightmare.
Yes. I think Gutenberg was kind of handed to him.
Yes.
Although ultimately, because of Brantley's notes, we know he had lunch with him and went for it. But I don't think he was his first choice. Neither was Isabelle Huppert. But then he arrived at that. I think Elizabeth McGovern's pretty good at
this. She's awesome.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
she's the best.
Anytime she was popping up, I was so happy. And I thought, Isabel was murdered, I was thinking, like, why isn't Elizabeth McGovern? And then she kind of becomes the co-star after that. But, like, like a little switchy. But, I think it's like, you know, with the Gutenberg, it's like, I was talking about it with Leslie because we watched it together this morning.
Oh, Amanda and I
watched it last night.
Well, she had to go to bed at a certain point, but.
I mean, I'm curious what her feelings are about Gutenberg, but like, because we were saying, like, we were talking about it, it's like, it's similar to Craig Wasson in Body Double.
Yeah.
Where people, like, that specific role, and it's maybe what you're talking about with Elliot Gould and the Silent Partner, where they have a little bit of an amoral quality, or they're not entirely heroic. They kind of fuck something up. I think that can be a real tough part to play. And the ones who do it well is like John Travolta in Blowout or Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window. But those two actors are people who are like number one, top of the list of people just like, I like that person so... I love John Travolta. I love Jimmy Stewart. They make me so happy. Like, they're just people who are naturally likable. It seems like you have to cast people like that in a role where they're, like, kind of a weird voyeur, not entirely above the table. But, like, if it's Gutenberg or Wasson, and Gutenberg, he thinks he's sexy. He thinks he's charismatic.
I know. It's a little forced. And yet, I love the guy. There is something about Gutenberg that does work, just not in this movie. Gutenberg in a Police Academy movie? Flawless.
I love it. Hey, I'm not saying Gutenberg alone. And there could have been something, I think, interesting when I was like, because the thing that I do like that this movie hinges on is a guy trying to, like, it all kind of starts snowballing because he wants to seem like tough or cool or sexy in front of the woman. She's like, I'm scared to call, or I don't want to call. And he's like, well, then I'll call for you, baby, and I'll just give your testimony, like what you said is mine. And then he like pays the price of like trying to seem cool or heroic. And I was like, well, Gutenberg, that would be cool, because his whole thing is like, I'm a nice guy. That's always kind of his thing, like a wise ass.
Yeah.
And to see like that be kind of like scuffed up or made like dark.
Mm.
Oh, Gutenberg, in all of his movie roles, he always thinks he's the nice, charming guy. He tried in this moment to be nice and charming and call in for the cops, and now he has to pay for it, like Griffin Dunn or so. You know what I mean? It was just like, but
when this movie worked the least, it was when Gutenberg and Huppert were talking, because he just was doing something else that this character needed,
mm-hmm.
other than what this character needed, and she's very heavily ADR'd. So already, it's not that her accent's too thick; it's just false coming out of her mouth. That you can't, I don't think you can match nuance in those scenes with ADR. Like, it just,
they really do seem like two different actors in two different movies. Like when I was watching, I thought, and no slight on either of these actors that I'm comparing them to, because I like these actors a lot, but I was like watching and thinking like, this would be like if John Ritter and Julie Christie were like together.
I know it is. Yeah. Cause she's so kind of steeped in like bedroom noir where, and he's just lighthearted kind of slightly randy comedies.
Yeah.
You're right. It is John Ritter and Julie Christie. Who would you cast in this, in these roles? We can keep Elizabeth McGovern, keep Wallace Shawn, and keep the bad guys.
Yeah, that bad guy. Cool. I like his eye. Like, he's spooky.
He reminded me of the albino in Foul Play. And then I looked him up and I didn't recognize him. And then when he's older, you recognize him from many, many things.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But
interesting.
Because he also, you know, what's interesting about people with that red of hair, when they go fully gray, there's no evidence of their past of being a redhead. So he's just been gray for quite some time. And
it's like a witness protection program for gingers.
That's right. And they need it. So who would you cast?
Well, if you go on the tip of, you got to cast a Jimmy Stewart or a John Travolta.
Okay.
Somebody
like
who's like, people just really have kind of clear, easy affection for.
Yeah.
During that time period.
Steve Gutenberg.
I mean, it's funny. Like, you'd think that is,
I know,
Gutenberg. The problem, it gets kind of shaky, and I'm saying this as a way to figure out who would be good, well cast, is it gets even shakier at the end when he's supposed to be like a paranoid man who's like losing his grip, because they like then start putting like darker eyeliner around his eyes and stuff. But like, he doesn't, I mean, even, and I like Craig Wasson in Body Double, but like in that, when he's like drinking like whiskey from a bottle and has like 5 o'clock shadow, I buy that more than this.
Cause he also is just still cracking jokes.
Yeah. Right. It's so weird. I'm trying to think of who could do that part. Like, you see them start to kind of like become losing a grip and you believe it. More so than the like
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, that's good, dude.
Yeah, I mean, he's no stranger to this genre, so.
Jeff Bridges is really good, because it has to be like an every man.
Yeah, but with charisma.
Yes.
And likability.
And that's where I think the movie, I mean, I like the opening, because even in a yuppie nightmares tropes way, you think it's the trope of the person's getting ready to go out to the big party, and then the surprise of like, oh, it's him coming back to the party, getting the place ready for the woman. I was like, the trade-off they made for that little clever surprise, as opposed to, and this is just, you know, the movie didn't do this, so why am I saying this, but like, it just seems like the scenario that they found themselves in of like, we can't talk about this, it would have been like better set up if it starts at that party and he's talking to his boss,
right?
And him and his boss kind of have a weird thing, but you know, like he, and then he goes over and he talks to his wife and you're like, are they sleeping together? And then they get back to his apartment. You're like, oh, they are.
Yes. You're absolutely
right. And now
right.
it's like,
that would have been so
this
much
sort
better.
Of confusing way that they're meeting up and then meeting her husband after the witnessing. You're just kind of like mixed up on well, why would they keep this secret? And what are the players in this?
I know there's a few little weird motivations, and it does make you think that this movie is ripe for a remake, which apparently it almost did twice with Kaley Cuoco. And who did Brantley say was directing? I can look it up. And then Blumhouse was going to do it at one point. But let me look that up.
It's a good premise. I do like the... I don't know if the why somebody would call in or not call in and stuff would be the same.
Kevin Williamson.
Oh, right on!
Yeah.
I did think there's something contemporary about that would be cool in not thinking, though, if they remade this, but now that they are, thinking like, I did think there was something really interesting, you know, with yuppie thrillers or noirs or whatever. It is interesting of like, what was the little, we were talking about before, the choice that they make that's just a shortcut or something like that. And the idea that somebody wants the praise for a pursuit of justice that you know is wrong, but you didn't have eyes to.
Yeah.
That feels like of the time. Like that is like a difficulty. And when do you raise your voice to call something out? Why, you know, the thing we talk about of like, whose glory do you seek? Because just being sharing from my own personal life, there's been a couple of times where I've called out somebody out for homophobia in front of a group of people and been like, that's fucked up. You shouldn't say that. But it's when I don't like the person.
Interesting. So you give someone a pass,
so
possibly.
I am a person who is anti-homophobia.
Yeah.
And I believe in that. But I speak up to it. Not all the time. There's times where I'm just saying there's been two times I can remember where I called somebody out for being homophobic. And it was true. And they should have been called out. But I was kind of doing it because I didn't like that person. And I knew I was on the most moral firm ground I could be, which is like, you're a homophobe, I'm not, you're wrong, I'm right.
Yeah.
And so just the idea that somebody would be like, well, you did witness this, I didn't, so I'm kind of doing the right thing here, and maybe you think I'm cool because I'm doing, like, I was just like, that's a really good start for a thriller.
Yeah,
but
it is, and it is a good idea. It's based on a book. And I guess Elizabeth McGovern was an invention for this film. Her character's not in the book, which is really interesting because it's such a pivotal part of this movie.
Yeah.
What's also fascinating is the way we're entering into Yuppie Nightmares this second season. So you go After Hours, which is really a movie before it's a Yuppie Nightmare. It's just a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got this one, which is just strange and weird. And it has on paper the elements of a Yuppie Nightmare, but still doesn't have the, like, it's not very cozy necessarily.
No, you know what it's called it? I was like, I'm not being like seduced here.
No, yeah. It's
like
not.
The first 20 minutes, it's just like a, then this happened, then that, then this. And none of the scenes ever have one like quality where you're like, ooh, that's cool. That's
and
neat.
The people, you don't...
It's just kind of all basic, like, yep, they're doing this, now they're doing that.
It's a little alien.
Yeah, and I, when I was watching, I was like thinking with Yuppie Nightmares, a huge component of it, and I guess you realize this when you don't get something, you go, oh, that's what I like when I do get it, is when how those movies seduce me.
Seduce you into... A little bit of lust, a little bit of coziness.
Yes.
Remember when we were watching...
But they seduce you into the bad choice the person makes, too. You kind of go like, I'm just enjoying this ride. I'm going for this. But the way it was all coming together, I was kind of like, well, I don't know what he likes about her. And
you don't judge them as much in a well-made Yuppie Nightmare. This one, you are questioning him.
Yeah.
As opposed to being along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Remember yesterday when we were watching Halloween 6 and you go to both versions have the scene where Loomis is just in a real cozy sweater and his like... cabin or wherever he is and you get hit with such coziness right in the face.
It's the best.
And this movie never
I know I there was coziness. A couple times in my notes where I wrote cozy question mark, like, Are aquariums cozy? I don't think so.
I don't think so. No.
Are opera houses cozy? Kind of. Like, an aquarium could be cozy. Yeah. An opera house could be cozy.
And you know what should have been cozy, like in American Werewolf, is when he stays the night at her place. But
dude,
it's so,
I was just going to say that. Her apartment was so messed. Like, it looked, it was white and had contemporary art. And I'm like, yeah. Well, you've been saying this whole time she ain't a yuppie. He goes to the yacht club bar with the St. Elmo's Fire crew where the girl is dancing around.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is a Michelob Light crew, whatever. And then you go to her bar and you're like, oh, she's not a yuppie. She's in a place with brick and neonites. Yeah. And I loved how at the beginning when Isabel, when she comes over and he goes, he wants something to drink. She goes, white wine. He goes, I got a beer. And then when he goes over to McGovern's at the end, she goes, you want a beer?
Yeah.
I was like, he found his woman.
I know.
But to that point then, her apartment should have been like in American Werewolf, like just a cool girl's apartment that you paperbacks. And that's what it should have been. A lot of paperbacks.
Yeah, dog-eared paperbacks. Yeah. And then they uncozy her because she couldn't look more cozy as she is with that short haircut, that cool corduroy kind of Harrington jacket.
Yeah.
And then she goes in disguise and she ends up
The disguise is so crazy, too.
But they're treating the disguise like Gutenberg's looking at her like, whoa.
You really clean up nicely, don't you?
And I'm kind of going, are you crazy? I think objectively that's insane to think she looks better there than the natural version of her, which is like stunningly.
I couldn't believe.
Gorgeous and cute.
Yes, when they had the close-up of him being like, oh, who's this now? Like,
that's a nice wig. Wow, high-class wig.
Well, it was funny, too, because they're doing it. I now hate this in all movies now. The, like, let's use somebody as bait thing.
It's yeah,
like,
that just, this was rough.
But with her, it was like, they were, like, trying to make her look like his type. I was like, but he attacked her. She is his type. Like,
I know.
I know that they have to do it because they have to disguise her.
Yeah.
But to do it to try to, like, justify you have to make that? It look like his other victims, like you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then her, I did like the, whatever that guy's like psychosexual hangup was, like the,
oh yeah,
how it like messes him up to see a woman like be sexy in public with a group of guys. That was like,
he was an interesting villain, and he just doesn't speak until the end when he just goes, you.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because he's, you know, it's him from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as he turned up and you saw his face, I was like, oh, okay, that's not what this is about.
I know. And it's, for some reason, it's also weird too that he's like 21.
Yeah. I mean, that whole thing is set up weird, that it's like, I have to, maybe Curtis Hanson seems like a smart enough guy that there's something like that. Normally in these movies, these people are looking out a window at nude people, but like, she's nude and he looks up and she's naked. It was like he was having his own little like,
it was kind of a bait and switch to save Elizabeth McGovern. She didn't even know she was doing it, of like, you want that? Look over here.
Yeah.
And then
she
gets away. Yeah.
I mean, McGovern, I know we already said that she's great in this movie, but I think she's just really great in general, and a sort of like a jewel of 80s movies when she pops up, like Ordinary People, she's great in.
Who is she in that? Because I saw that she was in that.
She's the new girl that Timothy Hutton starts to, that he meets after he tries to commit suicide.
All right. Okay.
And they have a really sweet scene. I'll remember for the rest of my life at the end. She goes, it's after choir practice and they're walking in the snow, like to their cars or something. And she goes, you're a really good singer. And he goes, you're just saying that. but then she's also good and she's having a baby.
Yeah.
And
then the resurgence of Downton Abbey too. We can't forget.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't say like she's an undiscovered gem of, or a gem of the 80s movies, where
underappreciated.
But now, and she, in that yeah, it's interesting that her part was added from the book because, you know, we've talked about how yuppie nightmares, they start coming around right around the time that the people who had been going to slashers for the last 10 years are now like, now for something grown up. Let's see a yuppie be alone in their apartment getting stalked by a killer. At the end, I was digging it. I'm like, hey, we're just fully back in Halloween 1978 territory.
Which action she was like, movie too,
yeah, but then I was like, it gets mucked up when, and this is kind of how yuppie nightmares can sometimes muck up the fun of a slasher movie.
Yeah.
I liked her getting stalked around. I like her. I like the guy. He's scary looking. And then Gutenberg just comes in and they like tussle in a tight stairwell.
I know.
This isn't scary. It's not adrenaline. I'm not getting like action Gutenberg.
No, they have that one moment where the guy appears behind the window of the parking garage door or whatever, the stairwell door.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, anytime that guy popped up, it was effective, I think.
What if David Fincher took a go at this, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's real suspense and menace to be had. They just really don't explore enough. You know, when the bad guy figures out Isabelle Huppert is who she is in the courtroom, there should be at least another half hour, 45 minutes of fear and dread that he's going to come after
her.
And same
her.
With Elizabeth McGovern. Yes.
And if a David Fincher, say, made this, they would have to figure out how not to do the stupidest fucking thing in the world. Like, and the person in the courtroom indicating to the person in the witness stand.
Oh, I know.
So that both the victim and the accused both see it. I was before like, this is just too fucking convenient, guys.
Before they even got to that scene, I was like, well, if I was in that situation, we would come up with a signal for yes or no. Like she'd scratch her ear for yes and whatever, rub her hair for no.
And they kind of did this plan. But in a
meaning
in
she'd wear rubber hair.
But in the category of these people are being too dumb and you want somebody in a thriller to act smart so that the stakes feel sticky. Her showing up in the courtroom and doing gestures in front of everybody. I'm like, that is dumb.
Yeah.
And then when I was watching it, Leslie said, and this was probably my least favorite part of the movie, the whole wrongfully accused, like, they were trying to do a lot of Hitchcock stuff.
Oh, yeah. And De Palma.
And yes, and the Hitchcock thing of the wrongful man accused thing, just like I couldn't.
It wants to have its cake and eat it too. The other thing is
Leslie's point was, if he's wrongfully accused, he should just turn himself in and then they'll start asking him questions and they'll realize, like, this isn't the fucking guy. We're wrong. And then an attack will happen and they'll go get that guy. And they kind of do that. He's like, he turns himself in, but then he leaves again and he shows up at the place where she's supposed to be bait, where he's not around so that he doesn't get accused. It's
also
silly.
He's like thinking so quickly up on that stand. And then Wallace Shawn says, like, how did you see? And anybody with contacts, having been a contacts wearer, knows that you take your contacts out at night. And you wear glasses at night.
Yes.
And he just picks up his glasses off the nightstand and goes over to the window like you would do anyway.
I don't know why he didn't say that.
I know.
Yeah.
And I get why. Like, the plot has to be the plot. But it seems like you could write around something like that.
I mean, the Wallace Shawn thing, that scene was pretty preposterous. But it was the first time I was seeing an actual, like, character.
Yeah,
and a character doing something that wasn't just the obvious thing.
Or like, the weird thing. Like, the DA was weird. He was interesting, but he was weird.
That DA was weird, where he just comes in, he's like, this is what... I'm like, do you hate Gutenberg or like it? What's going on with
this
energy?
But he keeps patting him on the back, and then he just ogles that woman on the staircase, and I get that we're supposed to think, like, oh, this guy's a real player, but then they cast this kind of schlubby dude. Yeah. Also, something that was really weird is when he goes to Colin's house, and it's the maid, and she goes, ballet! They've gone to the ballet.
With the Wallace Shawn thing, the thing that I liked was how friendly he was at the beginning. I know. He played that so well. And that's an actor's choice. Oh, most actors would go in there and they'd immediately be playing the shark who's trying to get him on the hook or whatever.
It is interesting that the prosecution is kind of mean and the defense is friendly.
And then how he turns then at the end and then gets like hostile at the end once he's like realizes he has him. I was like, I love Wallace Shawn. That was fucking, I'd rather have Wallace Shawn than the Steve Guttenberg part personally. did we ever answer who would have been good?
It was Jeff Bridges, but not for, what is the role, the character name of Isabelle Huppert, so I don't have to keep faking a French accent. What was her name? I don't remember.
Yeah.
And that's the movie's fault.
Yes.
I don't even know Elizabeth McGovern's name.
I know.
What was Steve Guttenberg's name?
I don't know. In all my notes, it's just Guttenberg, Isabella, and McGovern all over
the
place.
I have Guten butt down for when you see his butt.
Matt, I will show you. I wrote Guten butt too. We both wrote Guten butt.
Just proof here.
We'll show the live screamers Guten butt so they know that this was not, that this was all
backwards, but
above board.
Yeah.
Guten butt.
Oh, Steve Guten butt.
Guten butt. See that guy? Steve Guten butt.
You do the Guten butt.
Ding in my heart. Two butts in this movie. You also see the killer's butt.
Oh, what? Three butts. You see Isabelle Huppert's
butt. Well, I only consider dudes have butts.
I understand.
But you know how it'll be like, you and I are a lot alike, detective. I thought that was kind of what they were doing with the like bad guy, good guy. Like, you and I both have butts and moonlights, Guttenberg. Another little trope thing, just as I was saying that I remembered that I really like is when at some point they pull Guttenberg aside to interrogate him when he's like trying to go to work. And I was thinking, like, I like it in movies when somebody's like, the cops pull him aside and they question. Oh, because he said to the cops, he was like, so are you going to charge me with anything? And they go, no, we just want to bring you in. In those scenes, I usually like it. There's an extra part where I'll go, are you going to charge me with anything, detective? And they're like, no, we can't. And he's like, well, then if you don't mind, I'd like to go to my daughter's wedding. Oh, I'd like to see my daughter get married today, detectives.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to give the eulogy at my mother's funeral.
Yeah. But then there's also the small ones that'll be like, well, and if you don't mind, detective, I'd like to finish this golf game.
Yes, right. It's
like, okay. Well, you bastard! Well, you bastard! We want to catch you, but you play golf!
I'm curious to put this against the tropes because I don't think there are many in here. If anything, it's an opposite of a nopey where
I said that I wrote that in my notes, opposite of a nopey. Yeah, when they bring the cops in and the cops are trying to get him and then he's trying to throw him off with the,
it literally is the opposite of a nopey
because he doesn't smoke, that he thought that as a, like a teenager knows if you get caught with cigarettes that aren't yours, you go that you don't want somebody to know. You just go, yeah, those are my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. My sister did it when I found a pack of cigarettes in her purse. She told me she was holding them for her friend Jamie.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't make any fucking sense, Matt. Why would my sister hold Jamie's cigarettes in her purse? Clearly not, my sister was smoking.
Is there not some exception they have for situations like this where someone was doing something they shouldn't have been doing, but it's not a crime or it's maybe just a misdemeanor, but they can come in and at least be an anonymous witness? I understand it's different if they have to testify, but
you mean in terms of their concerns about having an affair?
Basically, like if you went into the cops and said, look, I saw something, but I gotta let you know I was having an affair.
Yeah, I mean, that was interesting.
The cops would rat you out.
Because I did like that reveal at the end that she was kind of like, I knew it was that guy. I just didn't want to get embroiled in all this, and now we are. Because I thought that was like some, whatever, the white knighting kind of thing. Yeah. Like, she was just like, I was content to just sort of let this go by. But, yeah, to your question of, yeah, because her husband.
Whoa, what a character there.
Yeah, so
the gun, the whole gun thing?
That is the most bizarre way to introduce
I thought for sure that was going to be used.
I mean, talk literally about Chekhov's like gun, but it's a Bugsy Siegel's gun.
But
that was very
gold?
Can we consider that another example of how this movie's weird?
Yes. Why like put that in there?
Like, and they're at a workplace, and he's holding, like, he's tossing a gun. I know he's the boss, and his name is on the sign, but I still don't think anybody would be throwing around guns at an office.
It is a strange scene.
And that actor, I love when you watch a movie and you know an actor only from one other movie.
Yeah.
And so their cadences can only be the cadences you've heard a thousand times. So this guy, I don't know if you recognize him. I've probably seen this movie about 20 goddamn times, Gorley, is Scarface. I love Scarface so much. Oh. And he's the guy who, like, Tony works with. He's outside of the country, and he's the guy he's getting his cocaine from, Colombia.
Oh, okay.
But because he has a really great line in Scarface where he goes, "I like you, Tony. There is no line in you," which is, like, so funny because it's like he's been speaking perfect English for, like, 10 minutes in a scene, and then at the very end, he's like, "There is no lying in you." And then also, so the two gears that he has in Scarface, which is, "I'm seducing you, Tony. You don't expect me to be a snake." That's, like, what his scene is at the beginning. It's like, well, clearly this guy is evil. Right. He's like, but he's supposed to be. But at the end of Scarface, I love it how he, like, loses his shit. He goes, "Listen, you fucking little monkey." Like,
God, I wish I remembered this.
And he gets to do that at the end when he gets mad at Gutenberg. Then he gets to do that same, like, "Oh, I got the two moves from this guy."
Yeah.
The other actor who I recognize from only one other part, do you know?
Telephone booth guy?
No, but that guy's in Scarface, too.
Yeah.
Who is that guy? He's always a scumbag.
Yeah, he shows up a lot. So, wait, let me guess.
It's a little obscure, so I don't...
Okay, go ahead. It's not the guy in the green jacket that looks straight at camera.
No, who's that?
Was it at the police station? I'm trying to remember where that was. He's just like an extra, and they pan by him, and he's talking to someone else, and he just looks at the camera more than even Martin Scorsese's mom does.
I wish I would have seen that guy. The detective, plainclothes detective, the white guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's familiar.
I know him from as another cop, but not in plainclothes or detective, but as officer clothes. When he goes, "I gave 5 full body cavity searches myself, inside and out."
Oh, yeah. What is that?
He's the cop in Wayne's World.
Oh, wow. Wow, okay. Oh, my God.
You know how I was talking to Rhapsodizing about how in Pee-wee's Big Adventure was the first time, like, somebody who's silly isn't annoying people. Yeah. They just really, everybody gets along.
Yeah.
I do think Mike Myers took a page from that in Wayne's World. It's really great. Like,
right.
The cop loves Wade and Garth.
Yeah, that's
it's so
right.
cute.
That's right.
They're like, "Ooh, I smell pig," and he's like, "Ha ha, you kids, we used to do that too. Call the police pigs."
Can we take a pee break?
Yeah, let's take a pee break.
We'll be right back.
With Gorley and Rust.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
No.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, it's mm-hmm. that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Uh-huh. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number. Isn't that convenient? Along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
We nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
With Corley and Rust.
We started to get into a conversation that definitely needed to be on the
podcast.
Yeah,
you're like, hold on, Paul. Pump them brakes. We got to get this on mic.
Yeah.
I was saying that on the Patreon, somebody said, hey, architect here, I got to tell you guys, it's not glass bricks, it's glass cubes. And I think that's a good thing to note in
that's
yuppie
a
movie.
Fine not... line distinction, I think, but yeah.
Well, when I see a glass brick, that seems like Lego, but a glass cube.
Okay.
Like, I don't see glass bricks often.
Are they in this movie?
Okay, so now that's why we really had to come in here. Because Matt said, well, here's the thing. There's not even glass cubes in the movie. And I gave him a look like, easy there.
Cool your jets, pal. You're out of your league. You're out of your depth.
Now, here's the reason why I don't think you saw them, Matt. Because they're in a place where you'd least expect them. You know how they kind of go through different strata of bars in this? We were talking about earlier. There's the Yacht Club bar, and then they go to her kind of like cool bar,
her
but
Edgar Allan Poe bar.
Not preppy. The Nevermore.
That's got to be a real bar, right?
Yeah, I was like, they wouldn't have put all that work into getting a sign just for this movie, you know?
Yeah.
Weird thing to spend your money on. Although I'd love to have that Nevermore. But
I'd love to go to that bar.
See you tonight.
Okay.
By the end, they just wind up at a dive bar with the wood paneling where it's just a bunch of dudes all hanging around a pool table. That is where the glass block was.
That's at odds.
I know. It is very much at odds, and it doesn't really work with the yuppie. They should have been in the first bar.
They should have been in his apartment.
They should have been in his apartment.
For sure.
Yes.
He had an art drafting table. I'm not sure why. I guess construction plans or something. I had that exact same one when I was in high school and
the first time I saw a drafting table, I wanted one. My cousin had it. I waited until Christmas and then I got my drafting table and I loved it.
Oh, you had a drafting table. So did you have like a T-square and everything too?
Yeah, it was more just about having the big white board that kind of went up at a slant and you could sit there and draw.
That was great.
Yeah. My daughter now really likes to draw and likes to do the thing of looking at a picture of a cartoon character she likes and trying to... And I'm like, that for me when I was a kid, that was like... Even if it didn't look exactly like it. It was the first time where you feel like you have some sort of a creative power or something. It's very exciting.
I remember the very first time I drew Batman and Robin running at camera with like one leg down and the other one just a knee and then a foot behind it, like foreshortened. I think because I was just copying the 60s Batman opening titles, you know.
That's
remember noting that, going, oh, that's something that's like, that's different than them just standing there, you know.
That rules, dude. Yeah. I love that. Yeah, the I could spend a whole Saturday. We would get these big calendar pages, like wall calendars for big, like an office thing where you have to fill it up a bunch, you know, or a week calendar that's just a big square, basically a big rectangle. And I would tear off one of those, and then I would just be like, I'm going to just, not necessarily Where's Waldo style, but like just draw and like fill up this whole page. And then when I'm done, I'm done. And I remember I would just have the TV going and draw and kind of get lost. And
that's the best.
I think Steven Soderbergh has the, what's that? Making the hat, fixing the hat, doing the hat. But the song is about the bliss that a creative person can feel when they look down and then they look back up and like 2 hours passed and you're like, it was all purely
sometime in
right
my
brain,
life.
Left brain in conjunction. And what's that? What
were you saying? I just want sometime in my life. I want to sit down to do something I've never done. I've done it many times in high school and summer. I started animating a 2D cartoon and like painting cells and all this stuff, but I never finished. And I just want to do a short. And I now with iPhones, because I used to have a Super 8 camera with a one frame shutter release, but it was like you couldn't tell what you were doing until you developed it and got it back. And I didn't have a ton of money, so that was expensive. Mm-hmm. And now with iPhones, you can just tweak it all you need. And but I want 2D. I want to paint those damn cells. I want to trace them,
dude. That'd be awesome. What would it be?
I think of just full feature length animated version of the bedroom window. I don't know what else to do.
A friend who's an animator, and I get to know other animators through them and stuff. But they were telling me that animators really like to draw people dancing. That's like kind of an animator's dream.
Well, not to forcefully segue us back to this movie, but the scene of the people dancing at Nevermore, that was like convulsion and like
wait,
zombie.
The Nevermore, the what? You're not talking about the girl who dances.
No, I mean, that was something too.
Yes, it was.
It really was. I can't believe we haven't really.
That does seem like when somebody would watch the bedroom window, Crispin Glover dances funny in front of you. Think that would be what this is. Like, oh, the weird scene where the girl dances around the frat boys.
No, there's just a slow pan through the first scene and the establishing shot of Nevermore. And there's, you know, it's 80s dancing for sure, but there's one guy that's just like convulsing and like, I don't know if he's like, what he's doing, like Devo, some kind of Devo thing or something.
Well, the way those are lit, like, I think I looked up in 86 is when the Michelob ads, the night is for Michelob.
Oh yeah.
And those are just like steeped in neon. I was thinking even like, it's funny how neo-noir has like the words for neon. It's like neon, but like,
neo-noir.
Yeah. Cause in neo-noir movies, it's all neon everywhere.
Yeah.
But especially then those Michelob ads that were coming in the late 80s, there's a Rolling Stone interview with Stanley Kubrick where he's like, those Michelob ads are genius. And I looked into who made them and, read about this guy who's in advertising and stuff. And in his biography, he's like, Stanley Kubrick and a copy of Rolling Stone said his work was brilliant. Oh. But I have watched those Michelob ads. They are very, like, out. The atmosphere is dope.
Okay.
You know, it's like Eric Clapton.
Like, oh, that's right. Like, it's in the way that you use it, or what are they?
Stuff like that. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I got to get into those,
because
then
that Neil Young commercial or video made fun of it. Do you remember This Note's for You?
No.
Oh, it's good. It's like Neil Young being like, all these people who are doing these Michelob ads suck. This is like a spoof video of Spuds McKenzie. Sorry, too many tabs open.
We got them. Okay. I mean, hell, I don't have much else to say about this movie.
Yeah, let me see what else.
I'm glad I watched it. I don't know where to file it. I think it goes in a very special and smally assembled group of movies. I mean, would you partner this with any other movies that it has its kind of similar weirdness? Because it's also not fully kitsch, so it's not like a Verhoeven Showgirls or anything like that. Maybe, yeah. What was that movie with Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas recently?
Yes.
Kind of. I think that'll age into slightly similar territory.
I mean, it's kind of weird that this movie is in, not that it shouldn't be more problem, but when he was in that opera house or whatever.
The ballet. They've gone to the ballet.
And as I've said, in no movie can somebody go to a ballet or an opera and not have the events of the ballet or opera metaphorically stand for what's happening.
It's truly impossible.
So in Sleeping Beauty, when Sleeping Beauty's waking up, beauty of the movie is dying. I was like, okay.
Good, my God.
But the...
Godfather 3.
When that whole thing was full of people... And Gutenberg got on stage and he's covered in blood and he like goes through these giant curtains. I was like, I never knew this movie had that scale.
I know.
And that was kind of what was bewildering before was just like, oh, there was a thriller with Steve Gutenberg that Curtis Hanson made.
Right.
But now it's more like what you just said with the Ben Affleck thing. It's like, this is a movie that had scale.
Unless I think there's a 10% chance that they guerrilla shot that and just told Steve Gutenberg to run on stage during a ballet and they got cameras rolling and they got what they needed and got out of there.
There he was like, is that Steve Gutenberg? Yeah, I think he killed somebody.
Oh my God.
You're like, where does this movie like fit? I was thinking, you know, normally, you're the adventurous one.
What do you mean?
Well, you'll pick movies that you haven't necessarily seen for the podcast. A lot of times, I'll pick ones that I've seen.
Have you seen this?
I'd never seen this.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah.
So this was like one of those things of like, I was always curious to see it.
Yeah.
Finally got a good reason to see it. I watched it. And it was like, that's weird. So it was like an interesting journey.
It didn't like
journey.
Reward your... It didn't punish or reward. So yes. The verdict's still out on whether you're going to continue to...
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I know. When you do that, when you take that risk, you want to be rewarded. Because I'd say more often than not, you're probably not rewarded, you know?
Especially with something like that. I had a friend... Neil Campbell told me he watched Last of the Mohicans.
Oh.
And he was like, you're like, wow, a Michael Mann movie starring Daniel Day-Lewis. And then when you watch it, you go, oh, there's a reason this isn't talked about all the time. Like, it has all the trappings of, like, people should be talking about this movie forever. Oh, my God, that Michael Mann movie with Daniel Day-Lewis. But then you see it, you're kind of like... Okay, it just didn't...
Is that right? I remember it being good, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
Oh, he wasn't saying it was bad. It was just not, like...
Yeah, it should be
there's an all-timer. There's something why it's not an all-timer. And
right.
Yeah, not to say that Bedroom Window should have been an all-timer or anything, but it's just... just want to make sure we mentioned Dino De Laurentiis.
Right.
Because our man, he pops up here and there.
You know, that's the fingerprint on this film I think you feel the most.
Yes,
and that's probably
is.
Why it's weird.
And why it would have scale.
Yeah.
Like, why it could be big budgeted. Because we were always like, Dino De Laurentiis is like Roger Corman with more money. With European financiers or something.
I love that story. It's in Brantley's notes about De Laurentiis basically forced this Italian director of photography on Curtis Hanson. But he either quit or Curtis Hanson... Oh, and he didn't speak English, so they had to have an Italian crew to work with him. But then the DP either left or was fired, and then they were stuck with this Italian crew that they couldn't speak English.
The Tower of Babel situation there.
Yeah.
When I said...
The Gutenberg Babel.
Well, the Gutenberg Babel, the Gutenberg Press Babel. Yeah. I just remembered that in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, they described the filmmaking... for Italian movies is like a Tower of Babel thing because it's different people speaking different languages. And it did remind me when I watched this, it's in in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, when the attack happens at the end, the music that's playing is the da-na-na, don't want you, babe. You just keep me hanging on. Oh, it is. That's the song that's playing in the bar. In this, not to say that they were, it was inspiration, but she goes over and she like grabs and twists his balls while that song hits. Yeah. And it's like,
but if I'm not,
it's not a dog munching on his balls, but it's pretty close.
That's right. It's not the like recording we're used to, right? It's one of those cheap versions where it's, they pay for the publishing, but not the performance, and then they re-record it.
But if I'm remembering Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's not the original. Oh, it is not? A cover, but it's like a cool cover.
Yeah, cool cover. This is made for the movie. A work for hire. Yeah. I mean, that was the only song I recognized in this movie, and there were other songs.
I know.
And they felt like written for the movie in the same way that Frank Stallone writes for his brother's movies.
I know, when that identifiable song popped up in the bar, it made me realize, like, wow, this has been really just sound-alikes the whole time. Yeah, and whatever.
That score is so, I call it sexy.
Yeah.
It's telling you it's sexy, but it isn't.
I wanted just a couple more at the beginning. If they had just done some stylistic De Palma-y, Hitchcock-y flourishes of like, you don't necessarily have to have a camera swoop down like that, but we're going to do it at the beginning just to show you we're like got pyrotechnics or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like that, those remind me though, I love it. Like voyeur movies, how when people look through a window, it's always just the most perfect framing composition. Like what person ever stands exactly in the middle of a window? And
did yours have the Studio Canal?
Yes.
That blue sky animated opening. That was, I've never seen that before. That was,
well, weird. It got me ready for some fucking weirdness. The thing,
true logo, the, loco.
Yes.
Logo crazy.
It started, I was like, God, what is this? Yeah. Cool it. Yeah. And then, what do you want me to feel right now? That's like what I felt when I was watching that logo. And then the movie started, the whole movie. I was like, well, what do you want me to feel?
It's like, was it strategic where you're supposed to feel that this is so bad that the movie's got to be better than anything that follows this has got to be good.
That's actually would be smart. Somebody
banging just pots and pans.
I was thinking, as soon as somebody, you know, spoof movies are dead right now. They're not going to be here for a while, if ever again. I'd love it, but if a spoof movie opened like pre-studio logo, you know how like what was the Ben Stiller, Tropic Thunder had those trailers before the studio logo, so you got genuinely kind of tricked for a moment.
Right.
As soon as somebody spoofs the Nicole Kidman AMC intro.
Yeah.
Imagine how people are going to go fucking bananas in the theater.
All right.
You saw like a slob. I was like, and Finn's good. And he sits down and like rips a fart in the seat. You feel like this is the funniest movie in the world. Okay.
No, that's true.
Not right.
Wait, is there an erotic thriller spoof movie? There is, isn't it? What is it?
Fatal Instinct by Carl Reiner.
Ooh, should we add that on Scary Movie Style at some point to the season?
You know?
Like we need. I'm not saying we should. I don't know. But
Loaded
maybe.
Weapon 1 is more of a spoof of like Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
But because it came out during those movies, there's a lot of spoofs.
That's
all
right.
Those.
That's right.
I didn't see it, but Kristen Bell was in a Netflix movie that people said. It was like the girl looking out the window.
Yes. It's a spoof of all the girl movies.
Yeah. And those are spoofs of
I didn't
thrillers,
see that either. I saw the trailer. It didn't quite grab me.
Anybody who I talked to who saw it always spoke really highly
really?
Of it and went out of their way because I think they know I like spoof movies. They're like, you should watch it. I think you like it. And I never did. Have watched Hot Shots Part 2.
Hot Shorts.
Hot Shorts. Hot Shots Shart Do would have been good. Especially with the number 2. That might have been the most, again, weird. The weirdest police lineup scene I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It looked like they were in Outland. They came into these weird suits with like weird sci-fi lighting and stuff.
Paul, this is like the 40th time Outland has come up, and I can't stop. I have to believe it's divine providence at this point. Providence that we have to watch that. Right?
Yeah, Maybe that could be a way to kick in the new year.
Yeah.
Outland 2024.
Oh my God. Sounds great. Sounds great. We could do junk, like sci-fi horror to open the new year.
That's good. Yeah.
If we're still going to do the Hannibal for
Hannibal holidays.
Yeah.
Happy Hannibals. Holidays. Would you say it's a yuppie trope? The guy who drives a cool old car.
Yeah, I do think that is.
I think the most yuppie thing about this movie, yuppie nightmare things, is its class distinctions. It seemed to be the
fashions, the digs where they live, the car that he drives.
Yeah. And then the who's yuppie, who's not kind of thing.
Right. Like yeah, sometimes she's so low class, but wasn't really.
It did feel like a contemporary, like, the thing that, you know, it felt like throwbacky in kind of a Hitchcock way, but the thing that felt like what I loved about it was just, like, how it felt like a 80s slasher movie, too. Like
at the end, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. He kind of has a Michael Myers look to him. Like, if Michael Myers were... Well, Michael Myers kind of has red hair, but not...
Well, he sort of has a bent of, like, post serial killer, like he's like Ted Bundy now. It's like a guy who goes after attractive girls, or you know.
Yeah.
Have you seen Isabelle Huppert in other things?
No, but I know that what was the movie she was in recently where it's like a rape revenge movie. That was supposed to be really good.
Yeah, that Verhoeven did, right?
Isn't it just like the first name of a woman or something? I can't remember.
Yes. Why am I? Yeah.
I always wanted to watch that. I heard good things about it.
I saw her in this movie, The Piano Teacher. Have you ever seen that? It's like Michael Haneke.
But I know of it. Yeah.
It's pretty brutal. It's a dark movie, but I saw it. I was thinking about it. I saw it in college. At the Bijou Theater on the University of Iowa campus.
Pair at the Bijou?
The Bijou Phillips. And it was represented by Phillips light bulbs. So it was called the Phillips Bijou Theater. God. But the I was thinking, I saw this movie there and I was like, brutal. Piano Teacher, yikes. Tough stuff.
Is it any Haneke movie not brutal?
Yeah. And then it's the same theater though where I saw Dancer in the Dark and Requiem for a Dream.
Jeez, you really go there for some punishment, huh?
But I think I was also like, was that just what art cinema was in the turn of the century? Just like,
I think so.
I remember getting up at the end of Dancer in the Dark and walking out of the theater and looking over my shoulder. And there was a woman in her seat just like weeping. And a guy was with her and like trying to comfort her.
Oh my God, I've never seen that movie. I don't.
It's good.
Yeah, it's tough to. You know, we watched the other night Shutter Island. I never even opened her mainland. sorry, it's a tick every time. But that movie is dark. It's a genre movie, but I didn't remember. I remembered the twist, but I didn't remember what the details of the twist were with his family, and it was just both.
Isn't
Amanda
it weird
and I
though
were
how
like, oh no thanks
it's weird how Shutter Island I think came out before what's the Nolan Dream movie, I always forget the name,
Memento,
Inception
yeah.
They came out, I think, the same year, but both pivot on, like, DiCaprio's racked with the idea that the mom did something horrible to the kids.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And they keep going back to the memory of it. And as you go, it further explains what was going on between the family. But I wondered, like, I think Shutter Island came out first. So I wondered if Christopher Nolan was watching it. I was like, motherfucker, you could have told me, like, when we were doing all this stuff, that's like the exact same thing. I know.
How funny.
Because it's always like also seeing the kids kind of out by the backyard and yeah. stuff too, in both of those. But
that's interesting, yeah.
But Ben Kingsley's mm-hmm. in it, right?
Yeah.
Did you like it? What did you think? Was it too dark for just kind of on a genre?
Well, you know, I remember the first time I saw it, seeing the twist a mile away, and mm-hmm. not that the movie's about the twist, and this time it felt less about the twist, but I remember not liking it the first time, flat mm-hmm. out not liking it, mm-hmm. which is really weird to say about a Scorsese mm-hmm. movie.
Because you like Cape Fear, so it'd kind of be like, oh, he's getting yeah. back in the yeah. zone of doing
something. I didn't appreciate it. This time I liked the genre part of it quite mm-hmm. a bit. But then, yeah, the dark part of it, and this was just me. I just didn't enjoy that. So mm-hmm. it kind of was a bit of a downer. And then now there's some of the dated, like, reliance on color timing and CG and stuff mm-hmm. like that. That mm-hmm. doesn't feel right in a Scorsese movie, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. As much as he's, like, abandoned all his fast camera moves and stuff for that movie, it's interesting. I liked it more than I saw it the first time, but I didn't enjoy it. More, mm-hmm. if that means mm-hmm. anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you see it in the theater?
No, I don't think so. I think I just seen it twice.
I remember I saw it in the Bowl, Hollywood, not the Hollywood Bowl, the Dome.
Oh.
And I more remember stepping out of the theater and hanging outside the theater talking with friends about it. That's like yeah. my memory of it. Interesting. Being like, oh. But, you know, I'm seeing Killers of the Flower Moon tonight.
You are? I yeah. didn't know that.
Yeah. And I'm excited because. Today I get to live in the zone of, you maybe only get this maybe once or twice a year, where you're like, I'm seeing a great movie tonight, like I'm gonna see something.
You're gonna see cinema.
Yeah,
yeah.
Where and I remember feeling that the day I was gonna see like A Serious Man by the Coen Brothers, like being high off the idea of like I get to see a new Coen Brothers movie. Yeah. Like, how cool is that? So that's how I'm feeling right now with Scorsese.
Where are you seeing it?
At the Chinese.
Oh, wow.
7:30.
Oh my God. That's wonderful. Amanda and I, for some reason, we were thinking it came out last weekend. So we got a sitter and went to buy tickets.
Oh,
and was like, no, wait, it's the next weekend. And then we can't see it this weekend. So it's so hard to get away for, it's 3.5 hours long, right?
Yeah. So, I know we had to like add extra sitter time than more than normal.
Of course, yeah. So I don't know when we're going to get to see it, but I'm dying to.
Yeah. Any other things out that you're...
Well, yeah, for me, this...
this whole year, because you got the Le Carre.
Yeah, the John Le Carre, the Pigeon Tunnel. That's kind of like what you're saying, like once or twice a year, not even a year, you get something that is so Errol Morris and John Le Carre.
That's good.
Fuck.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think they're, if I'm probably predicting, but I wouldn't be surprised, they're going to, you know, play mind games with each other.
Yeah. Did you see the Errol Morris documentary about the CIA, the acid experiments and stuff?
MK Ultra?
Yeah.
Started it, but for some reason, I don't know why I didn't finish it.
Yeah. I finished it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
It was, I liked all the subject matter and the mood.
I should give that another go.
Yeah. But... It is funny. It is like a political spy kind of espionage type movie.
Yeah.
But also you could just boil down to the horror of if your friends dosed you and didn't tell you.
I know. Like,
it's also just
it's one or the other. Yeah.
Last bit of thing here. Loved the arcade cabinets in the bar. There was a Super Mario Brothers and a Ms. Pac-Man.
Yeah. That must have been like right when Super Mario came out.
I know, because I was like, that's when Nintendo was like hitting the scene. I was like, so Super Mario Brothers, I guess, was enough of an arcade favorite.
Yeah, but, I guess I was in junior high when we would go to a liquor store and play that cabinet game.
What was your arcade game growing up?
Dragon's Lair went, but that was like the premium, mm-hmm. you know, 2 quarters and it wasn't everywhere. So mm-hmm. when I could get it and when I could afford it, Dragon's Lair, which was not often. But probably Junior Donkey Kong Jr. And then Super Mario Brothers were the ones I kind of really dug into. And then there really was Pac-Man Fever. I know there's a song called Pac-Man Fever, but there really was. So everybody played Pac-Man, but I wasn't particularly good at it. My sister was really good at Miss Pac-Man.
Yeah, I way prefer Miss Pac-Man to Pac-Man. And I've become obsessed with Miss Pac-Man a couple times in my life. There's a cabinet somewhere and I go and I play it and I just...
Yeah,
really get to zone out, having fun playing Pac-Man.
There were later games that I really got into. One called Rolling Thunder. Do you remember that? And it was kind of like a, almost like a Japanese anime spy action, like scrolling,
based on the shooting. Children's book Rolling Thunder. Hear My Cry.
What about? Were there any others that?
I really liked Ms. Pac-Man. I was a pinball kid.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Oh,
like
wow.
Pinball games.
Oh,
pinball
wow.
machines. I really like racing games.
Oh.
And so I've gone back now, pulled out the old PS4. I've been playing Need for Speed.
Oh,
recently.
My God. Oh, wow. How fun.
Because been introducing Mary to fun video games.
Oh, that's cool.
We've been having fun. She got to play. On the rebel, what's the opposite of the Rebel Alliance? We play a Star Wars game, and she always chooses to be on the bad guy team.
The Empire?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Empire, sorry. But I don't know why you'd want to do that, because when you're on the rebel side, you get to shoot at the AT-ATs and and blow them up. When you're a bad guy, you don't get to blow them up, which is like, what's the fun of that?
Yeah, really.
Protecting one of them?
That's the whole point. I'm realizing all my favorite games are kind of like secret agent oriented, of course, because there was another one called Elevator Action. Do you remember that one?
No, but wasn't there one called Spy Hunter?
Spy Hunter was a car game. Yeah.
Okay. But that what was Elevator the Action?
Peter Gunn. Spy Hunter was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Elevator Action was just a dude with a gun jumping from elevator to elevator. It was an early game, and it, like, you know, slightly dodgy graphics, but pretty cool.
Loved Rampage. I liked the video arcade game Rampage, where you
Rampage
King Kong.
Ah, yeah.
Because I loved Rampage. How they looked cartoony. The whole thing kind of looked like you felt like you were playing a cartoon, which was cool. And then the just absolute saddest. I don't know what my brain does, but the image and sound of a arcade King Kong grabbing, crunching through a building and making that.
I know.
And then grabbing somebody and putting it in your mouth and chewing them.
Yeah. That game, I played that recently at Barcade in Highland Park.
Oh, fun.
There's a retro bar and arcade, and they have, I think three of us played, which was fun to play that with people again.
Yeah.
And Gauntlet that way too. Do you remember Gauntlet?
Yes.
Wizard is about to die.
It's too bad Barbarian Gauntlet wasn't based on the badly. Clint Eastwood movie, The Gauntlet.
Oh, with Tyne Daly? Wait, no. Who's in that?
His girlfriend. What's her name? Not Sandy Dennis, but something like that.
Not Fisher.
Guys, on the live stream?
I can look
without
it up,
looking it up?
I feel like I know
Liana Denley or something.
He was in a movie with Tyne Daly, too.
Oh, though. He was. Yeah, it was the second, I think, I was going to say Harry Potter movie. Dirty Harry movie. Dirty Harry Potter.
What?
Go ahead, make my Quidditch. What else could Dirty Harry Potter say?
The Gauntlet. I know her name. What is her name? Here, I'll just look it up.
What are the two things Dirty Harry says? Go ahead,
Sandra
make my
Locke.
Day. Sandra Locke.
Tell me, do you feel lucky, punk?
Yeah. Well, tell me, punk. Do you feel Quidditch, punk? Well, do Quidditch.
Well, do Quidditch.
The last note I have is, if this whole movie was kind of a little confused about, I don't see any sexual erotic vibe between Gutenberg and Isabel.
Yeah.
So when she dies, and she's great in The Piano Teacher, by the way. I just wanted to say, and she's also great in I Heart Huckabees. And then when she dies and he starts romancing Gutenberg, and there's a part where she comes in the room and he's like got his hairy chest out and she's like, ooh, come to the bedroom, mister. Yeah. I thought it was telling at the end, in the last shot of the two of them together after, like, crisis has been taken care of and whatever, they've had a victory. He just, like, put his arm around her and she kind of, like, nuzzled up to him. And it was almost like they cut out before a kiss happened. And I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, that's not...
You know she leaves him the next day.
Yeah.
And she needed, like, to get through this, understandable.
You they could do that in another movie where it was, like, erotic.
Or Jeff
Bridges.
But this
movie's so not sexy. Like, you that's wouldn't want to see people kiss at the end. You're like, yes, just hug.
It's overlit, it's overwrought, and it's overweird. Hi, I'm Matt Gourley, and these are my thematically linked three-word reviews.
My OWs.
Yeah.
My over W's. But I'm glad I took the risk. I was always eventually going to watch
Yuppie Nightmare. Oh, me too. I would have chosen it eventually. This probably would have been in my season three of Yuppie Nightmares, which, you know, God willing, will happen.
God willing.
There's only two baby xenomorphs to read. Okay, so this is just...
Celluloid defending H.R. Giger. Oh, look at my little client. What's your name, son?
My name H.R. Giger, but wish my name could be Megan Seawald. Oh, but to her husband, Brian Shepanik.
Hey, Southern lawyer.
Yeah?
Did you go to law school with the lawyer from the bedroom window?
I sure did. I also went to law school with that guy from The Princess Bride who says inconsiderable.
And finally, it's me again. I wasn't done. Mr. Drew Jensen, tell me, if I walk back 22 yards at the back of this courtroom and hold up this microscopic piece of something, what is it? You can't see it? Oh, are you short-sighted? Oh.
It's a red book. It's a book you open and flip the pages.
Uh-oh, there goes my case. I unrest my case. Wake up, case.
Wake up, case.
All right, what do we want to
rate? Guys, what did you think? All right, yes.
We got to rate it still.
We got to rate this movie. That's right.
We gave After Hours, both of us.
Best kill.
Oh, right. Well, who is it? Just Isabelle Huppert?
Yeah.
Is that the only one you see?
That was a good one.
Oh, no. And the bad guy doesn't even die in this. That's interesting.
Wow. Huh. What would have been a fitting end for him?
It's just a car accident. I guess if he blew through the windshield and then.
I think, very public death. Because his whole thing was like, he doesn't like seeing people in public kiss and touch each other.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, you don't like things out in public. What about your death? What about your brain smashed against the street, you perv?
He flies through the windshield and his genitals are eviscerated by a, like, tree branch or something.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
Curtis Hanson, there you go.
Because he, now that I think about that, he was basically, it was like a Norman Bates thing. He lived in a house with his mom.
And his dad. You see his dad at some point,
ooh,
too.
Scary.
Yeah, very scary.
We
gave After Hours 12 out of 13. What's the bedroom window to you?
I'll give this a 7.5.
7.5. I'll give it... So 7.5, that's... I'll do 6.5. I'll give it a halfway to 13. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the question that will always be on my mind for the rest of the time will be, could the movie have been better?
Yes.
If it had been differently cast? Or
for sure.
Is that just the main thing I noticed and everything else is kind of not quite there? Like, are there script problems that would have been there even if it had been Jeff Daniels?
Yeah. It's really rare for me to go away from a movie going, I think I'm absolutely unchanged by this movie. It didn't. I wasn't upset for having watched it, but I wasn't glad for having watched it. I was just having watched it, and I was left a little confused by it. That's the thing I took away from it, is slight confusion of, but interesting. I'll never regret it. I'm
glad. I know. It was just a confusing, weird experience that didn't at really any point emotionally.
Yeah,
I think the only time I felt real kind of an emotional thing happened was during the witness stand scene. Because I started going, in my mind, I was like, well, I like Wallace Shawn kind of tried to get to the bottom of this. Ooh, but I don't know if I want him to get to the bottom of this. Like having some sort of like pull, like whatever the psycho thing of like somebody's acting bad and you kind of want them to get away with it, but you also want somebody to catch them.
Right.
That's like, I felt that in that moment. But other than that, I really didn't ever feel any kind of anything.
Well, hopefully that's not the case for next week, Bad Influence, which is from what year?
89, I believe.
Curtis Hanson's got 2 years to kind of hone his chops.
And I have seen Bad Influence.
I have not.
And I remember liking it quite a bit. So.
Okay. Well, I'm very
excited.
We'll see.
I could have egg on my face.
Yeah, we'll see.
What would have been a food from this movie that I could have said instead of egg that would have been funny? Or any kind of thing on my face.
White wine on your face.
Yeah, that's good. I could have had white wine on my face.
French white wine,
What happened to the husband? He just...
Yeah, they...
I hope he gets... Well, he got justice. The guy who killed his wife is going to get caught
in the hospital and goes to jail.
Awkward time around the office, though, the next day, huh?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I know you didn't kill my wife, but you were around when she did, and you were having sex. Well, Maddie...
all right.
Hey, hopefully you guys next... For this next week, aren't bad influences.
We'll see. Naughties. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For more Gorley and Rust content, head over to patreon.com/withgorleyandrust to get episodes ad-free and a whole week early. Plus, monthly mailbag episodes and feature-length watch-along film commentaries of your favorite horror classics. That's patreon.com/withgorleyandrust. Email us at withgorleyandrust@gmail.com, and your questions might be featured on a future mailbag episode. With Gorley and Rust theme song by me, Matt Gorley, and performed by Townland. You can find us on Instagram as Townland Band, as well as Paul's fantastic band at Don't Stop or We'll Die. And why not rate and review With Gorley and Rust on Apple Podcasts? It'll help us grow the show and keep us trucking through the Jasons and the Michaels, the Leatherfaces and the Chuckies, the Aliens and the Candy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.